Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever found yourself wondering how software teams truly measure if they're, you know, getting things done? On the surface, it seems straightforward, doesn't it? More code, fewer bugs, faster delivery. That sounds like, well, a clear path to productivity.
Right.
But what if the very way we try to measure done or productive is far more complicated and, frankly, a lot noisier than it appears?
That's precisely the fascinating territory we're navigating today. Our core topic is cycle time.
Cycle time. Okay.
Yeah. For those maybe unfamiliar, it's a metric that's gained immense popularity in software development. Essentially, it tracks the duration from when a software task, often called a ticket, is created.
Right, like in Jira or something.
Exactly, to when it's finally completed and delivered.
Yeah.
It's widely seen as a crucial indicator of efficiency and velocity in the industry.
Okay.
But the central question we're exploring, thanks to some really cutting-edge research, is this. Is cycle time truly the magic bullet for understanding how fast software teams deliver? Or is its reality far, far messier?
And when we say cutting-edge research, we really mean it. This deep dive is built around a fascinating new preprint study that dives incredibly deep into this exact question.
It's pretty substantial, yeah.
It analyzes an immense amount of real-world data. Over 55,000 observations from nearly 11,400 contributors across 216 organizations. Mm. So our mission today is to cut through the noise of what feels right, maybe challenge some common assumptions, and help you understand what truly impacts software delivery speed.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear some surprising facts and hopefully some practical takeaways that might just shift your perspective on what getting things done really looks like in software development.
Yeah, definitely.
So the allure of cycle time, it's undeniable, right? It promises clarity, a clean, objective number you can track. It just feels right.
It does. It feels tangible.
Like a direct measure of how fast work is flowing. In
right.
fact, industry reports like one by Carey from 2024 frequently point to cycle time as a top metric for engineering productivity. The logic seems simple: shorter cycle time, more efficient team. But what hidden complexities might that simple logic be overlooking?
Well, the complexity truly begins with the very notion of productivity in software engineering itself. It's inherently poorly defined and incredibly difficult to quantify in a consistent way.
Right. It's not like making widgets.
Exactly. Unlike, say, a traditional factory line where you're assembling identical cars, software outputs are rarely uniform. One unit of work, one ticket, can vary wildly in scope, complexity, and even the skills required.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just from team to team or organization to organization, but often even for the same developer from one day to the next.
Yeah, I could be fixing a typo 1 hour and then tackling a huge refactor the next.
Precisely. Think about it. A developer might be fixing that tiny typo in the user interface one day, and the next, they're architecting a fundamental change to the system's core. How do you consistently measure a unit of work across that spectrum? It's tough.
So it's inherently variable.
Hugely variable. And this conceptual complexity also means distinguishing between production, which is just the sheer quantity of output, and productivity, which factors in the resources used, and then performance, which includes broader aspects like quality, adaptability, and the long-term sustainability of that output.
Okay, so different layers of meaning there.
Exactly. A developer's daily work is this intricate blend of coding, yes, but also learning, collaborating, problem-solving, maybe mentoring, professional development. Boiling all of that down to a single quantifiable number, like cycle time, is inherently challenging.
Yeah, seems like you'd lose a lot of nuance.
You do. And the study we're dissecting today isn't trying to solve that entire productivity puzzle. That's a whole other can of worms. Instead, it offers an incredibly deep empirical look at cycle time itself, aiming to understand its many influences and inherent variability to help practitioners avoid common pitfalls.
And this brings us right to the human element, which I think often gets brushed aside when we focus purely on numbers. Developers, quite rightly, can have incredibly mixed feelings about being measured.
Oh, absolutely.
The adoption of new metrics, if it's not handled with care, can easily go sideways. There's a genuine concern about what researchers call organizational dehumanization.
Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like a cog.
Exactly. Where employees feel reduced to mere tools or cogs in a machine. And that can lead to a really toxic environment, impacting both well-being and, ironically, the quality of work.
Right. It can be counterproductive.
Totally. This fear of being reduced to a single number often fuels some persistent and, quite frankly, problematic myths in our industry. You've probably heard of the 10X engineer.
Ah, yes, the mythical creature.
This idea that a tiny group of developers are somehow 10 times more productive than everyone else. but here's the kicker. Its origins are incredibly shaky. It stems from a small 1968 study involving just 12 individuals working on small lab-like tasks.
Right. Not exactly representative of modern software development.
Not at all. That study never truly replicated on a larger scale, and it completely failed to account for how much an individual's performance can vary day-to-day, project-to-project. Yet, despite being largely debunked, this 10x myth has truly persisted. It just won't die.
And it has an inverse, doesn't it? The 0.1x engineer boogeyman.
Exactly. The controversial notion that some engineers contribute almost nothing, and this is where simplistic metrics can become really harmful.
Definitely.
We've even seen recent unpublished research attempting to identify these so-called low performers using less transparent machine learning models based on expert ratings.
Which raises serious questions about bias and transparency.
Absolutely. The issue isn't just about the validity of the models themselves. It's about the lack of transparency in how these judgments are made. When measurements like cycle time are used in a simplistic, uncontextualized way to label individuals as 10x or 0.1x, it fundamentally misrepresents the complex human nature of software development.
It really does. It risks turning a measurement tool, which would be useful for understanding systems, into a surveillance or punishment mechanism.
Yeah.
And that, understandably, generates a lot of anxiety and distrust among individual contributors. It can really damage morale.
So as we'll see in this deep dive, cycle time, despite its intuitive appeal, is far too noisy a signal for such simplistic and potentially harmful judgments.
Exactly. The project we're exploring isn't claiming to solve every single implementation challenge or organizational dynamic, but by providing a more robust understanding of cycle time's actual dynamics, it offers practitioners a much clearer map to navigate this complex terrain and avoid those common pitfalls. It's about bringing clarity and alignment with the real lived experience of developers, not just chasing a number.
Right. So this study truly goes beyond anecdotes, giving us a clearer picture than ever before. So how did they pull off tackling such a complex problem on such a massive scale? It's one thing to theorize about developer productivity. It's another to empirically test it with thousands of developers in real-world settings.
It's an incredibly impressive feat of research, honestly. They employed a really robust methodology to capture a comprehensive view of real software development activities.
So what did that look like?
Well, the sheer scale is remarkable, first off. Over 55,000 monthly observations.
Wow.
From 11,398 unique contributors across 216 organizations. These weren't just tech companies either. They spanned a diverse range of industries: finance, government, insurance, retail.
So a broad sample.
Very broad. And crucially, this data was collected over a full 12 months in 2022, which is vital for observing genuine trends over time, not just the snapshot.
Okay, that makes sense. And how did they get the data? Was it like surveys?
No, and this is really important. This wasn't some artificial lab experiment or just surveys. The data came from a software metrics tool that was actively integrated into the workflows of these real working software teams.
Ah, so observing actual work as it happened.
Exactly. This means the data isn't just a snapshot. It includes retrospective data, meaning they had measures from before and after the metrics tool was implemented in these organizations. So it wasn't dependent on individual users actively opting into the tool. It captured activity based on organizational level adoption.
That sounds much more natural, less biased.
It helps ensure a more natural capture of real world work, yes. And from a statistical perspective, they use truly sophisticated methods, specifically Bayesian hierarchical modeling and Weibull distribution analysis.
Okay, those sound complicated. What does that mean for us practically?
Well, the Bayesian hierarchical modeling, the important part is that it allowed them to precisely untangle different sources of variation. They could separate within-person effects, like how your own cycle time changes from month to month.
Okay, if I have a good month or a bad month.
Right. From between-person effects, which is how your average cycle time compares to others in the group.
Oh, okay.
Think of it like typing speed versus errors. Comparing different people, faster typists might generally make fewer errors. That's between person. But if you, personally, try to type much faster than usual for you, that's within person, you'll probably make more errors.
Got it. So it separates individual changes from overall differences between people?
Exactly. And using a Weibull distribution was also key, because cycle time data isn't nicely bell-shaped. It tends to have many quick tasks, but also a long tail of tasks that take much, much longer.
Right, those tasks that just seem to go on forever.
Precisely. The Weibull model handles that shape properly. This rigorous approach gives us much higher confidence in their conclusions, ensuring their findings weren't just artifacts of using the wrong statistical tools.
That sophisticated modeling really helped them paint a clearer picture then, which is exactly what we need here. The study then zeroed in on specific factors that industry experts commonly recommend as levers to influence cycle time. So let's dive into what they actually investigated.
It is good.
First up, coding time. How do they measure that?
This was measured by the average number of days per week a developer made at least one code commit.
Okay. Just were they actively pushing code?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The industry intuition here is pretty straightforward. More focused time actively writing and committing code should lead to faster task completion, right?
Right.
If you're consistently contributing, things should move along.
Makes sense. What else?
Then there's task scoping, which they looked at in two distinct ways.
Okay.
One was the total merged pull requests, or PRs. The idea here, very much aligned with Agile principles, is that breaking down larger work items into smaller, more manageable pull requests should lead to quicker completion, smaller bites.
Right, ship faster, learn faster.
Exactly. The second aspect of task scoping was the percent defect tickets. This represents unplanned work bugs, defects that pop up.
The stuff that disrupts the plan.
Yes. And the hypothesis is that a high proportion of these could bottleneck planned work, slowing down overall cycle time because you're constantly context switching or fighting fires.
Okay, coding time, task scope.
Mm.
What else?
And finally, collaboration was investigated, also in two interesting ways. First, they used a network analysis metric called degree centrality.
Degree centrality sounds technical.
It basically measures how many other developers contribute to the same PRs you do. It's a reflection of shared work on a problem. How interconnected are you on specific pieces of work?
Okay. So how many people are involved in getting this thing done?
In a way, yes. The intuition is that more collaboration, maybe more eyes on the code, faster reviews, shared problem solving, should lead to a smoother flow of work and thus shorter cycle times.
Okay. And the second collaboration measure?
That was comments per PR, simply the average number of comments on the pull requests you offered.
So how much discussion is happening around the code?
Exactly. This aimed to capture the depth and frequency of discussion around a piece of work. They also included several control variables, things like the number of unclosed tickets lingering, the month of the year, whether it was early or late in a quarter, and team size, just to make sure their findings were as precise as possible, isolating the effects of their main variables of interest.
Right, trying to control for other factors that might influence things.
Precisely. Standard good practice in this kind of research.
Okay, so with all that meticulous data collection and that sophisticated analysis, what did they actually find? Were there any dramatic correlations, the kind we often hope for, that scream silver bullet for productivity? Did anything just jump out?
Well, the surprising truth is, while these factors do influence cycle time, their impact is often far more modest than we intuitively hope or maybe assume.
Ah, okay. So no silver bullets then.
Definitely no silver bullets here. Let's break down what is associated with shorter cycle times and then look at what turned out to be more nuanced or even counterintuitive.
All right. What helps speed things up?
First, on the intuitive side, coding days. This one matched expectations. Both individuals who average more coding days per week over the entire year and those who managed to increase their coding days month to month consistently tended to have lower cycle times.
So more time coding means faster delivery. Seems logical.
It does. And this effect even strengthened a bit later in the year, interestingly. It really aligns with common sense. Dedicating more focused time to actually writing and committing code does indeed help you complete tasks faster. It's not revolutionary, perhaps, but it's empirically confirmed.
Okay. What else lined up with expectations?
Second, total merged PRs. Remember, this is about breaking work down. The study found that having more merged pull requests, which signifies breaking work into smaller, more manageable chunks, was associated with lower cycle times.
So smaller PRs are better?
It appears so, yes. This held true for both the developer's average number of merged PRs over the year and their month-to-month increases. This clearly supports that widely accepted agile principle. Smaller, more frequent deliveries lead to quicker completion and a smoother flow of work.
Good to see that confirmed with data on this scale. Anything else on the positive side?
Yes. Third, degree centrality, our measure of collaboration where more people contribute to the same PR. Developers who collaborated with more people on pull requests, meaning they had a higher degree centrality, consistently tended to have lower cycle times.
So more collaborators on a PR speeds things up, not slows it down.
Apparently speeds it up on average. This was true for both their average collaboration levels and for month-to-month increases in collaboration. What's fascinating here is that, contrary to the common worry about too many cooks in the kitchen, working closely with others on shared problems actually seems to accelerate things in this context. It suggests that good, focused collaboration, where multiple people contribute effectively to a PR, can facilitate faster reviews, better shared understanding, and quicker problem solving, preventing bottlenecks.
That's really interesting. Okay, so those are the things that seem to help. What about the more complex or surprising findings?
Right, now let's look at the factors with more nuanced or even counterintuitive associations. Percent defect tickets is a really tricky one.
The bug fixing.
Yeah. The study found a kind of dual effect. First, the between-person effect. Individuals who, on average, had a higher proportion of defect tickets over the year tended to have longer cycle times overall.
Okay, that makes sense. If you're dealing with more bugs, things take longer.
That's the intuitive part.
Yeah.
This could suggest that some developers are maybe bug-squashing specialists, dealing with inherently harder or more complex bugs. Or it might reflect organizational factors. Maybe certain teams are simply swamped with defects, leaving less time for planned work, which drags down their average.
Right, systemic issues.
Could be. However, and this is the counterintuitive part, the within-person effect was the opposite. For any given person, an increase in their defect tickets in a single month was actually associated with lower cycle times that month.
Wait, more bugs fixed in a month means faster average time? How does that work?
It seems odd at first, right? If you think bugs always slow things down. But a plausible explanation the researchers offer is that an increase in defect tickets might signify a shift in work focus for that individual during that month. Maybe they moved from working on large, complex new features,
which take a long time.
Exactly. To suddenly doing a lot of quick, small bug fixes. If you knock out a bunch of small, fast fixes, it can actually bring down your average cycle time for that specific month, even though it's unplanned work.
Okay. So it's about the type and size of work dominating that month's average, not just planned versus unplanned.
Precisely. It highlights that the nature of the work, not just its category, significantly impacts this metric. It's a really good example of why context is so crucial.
Definitely. What other surprises were there?
Another surprising finding, concerned. Comments per PR, the other collaboration measure. More comments per PR were associated with longer cycle times.
Longer. I would have thought more discussion might lead to faster resolution or better quality.
Me too. Intuitively. But the data suggests otherwise, on average. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean communication is bad. The speculation here is that a higher comment count might indicate more difficult or complex problems.
Things that require a lot of back and forth.
Exactly. Problems needing extensive discussion, debate, and clarification to resolve. It might signal deeper, more involved problem solving. Or, potentially, it could reflect problematic communication patterns where clarity is hard to achieve. Or there's a lack of upfront alignment causing extended debate in the review phase.
So it's ambiguous. It could be good complex work or inefficient communication.
Right. It points to the need for more granular analysis, maybe looking at the content or sentiment of those comments, not just the count. It's not a simple more is better or more is worse situation.
Fascinating. Okay. Were there any factors that just didn't seem to matter much at all?
Yes. A couple stood out for their lack of effect. The study found almost no association between team size and cycle time.
Really? You often hear about communication overhead increasing with team size.
You do. But in this massive data set, on average, the size of the team didn't significantly impact how quickly tickets were completed by individuals within those teams.
Interesting.
Similarly, there was only a very tiny negative association with the within quarter month. Basically, cycle times were just slightly shorter at the very end of quarters, maybe a tiny push to close things out.
But barely noticeable.
Very minimal, yeah. This suggests that while quarterly business cadences exist, their direct impact on individual ticket cycle time day-to-day is negligible based on this data.
Okay, so let me try and sum this part up. While factors like focused coding time, breaking work into smaller chunks, and certain types of collaboration do seem to influence cycle time in the expected direction, the magnitude of their effects is often relatively small. And other things, like defect work or comment volume, have complex, even counterintuitive relationships.
That's a great summary.
This research clearly points to the conclusion that there are no silver bullets, no single knob you can turn to dramatically alter software delivery speed with one simple intervention.
Exactly. It's much more about a complex interplay of factors and likely a compounding of smaller improvements over time rather than one big fix.
Which brings us directly to the next major finding, right? About the variability.
Yes, this brings us directly to their second research question, which focused on the substantial variability or noise in cycle time that makes individual comparisons incredibly difficult.
For noise, I like that term for it.
It fits well. The study found a considerable amount of unexplained variation. Even after accounting for all the factors we just discussed, coding days, PRs, collaboration, defect percentage, team size, time of year, all of it, there's still a lot of natural fluctuation in cycle time that the model couldn't predict.
So other things are going on that weren't measured, or it's just inherently unpredictable to some degree?
Both, likely.
Yeah.
This isn't just random statistical noise. It's inherent to the complexity and the human element of software development. There are countless tiny factors that can influence how long a single task takes.
Okay.
And what's particularly striking, maybe a bit humbling, is that this variability across individuals is even greater than the variability across organizations.
Wow, hang on. So the difference between me and my teammate could be bigger than the average difference between our whole company and another company entirely.
On average, yes. That's what the data suggests. Think about that. Your cycle time can vary more from your colleagues, even if you're on the same team working on the same product in the same organization, than the average cycle time differences between two entirely different companies in potentially different industries.
That really puts individual comparison into perspective.
It does. It raises a really important question. If cycle time varies so much from person to person, and significantly even for the same person from month to month, how useful can a single observation or even a few observations truly be for judging individual performance or predicting future speed?
Yeah, it sounds like it could be misleading.
Very easily.
Mm-hmm.
The study emphasizes that a single monthly average for a person is often not representative of their long-term trend.
Yeah.
It's like, as you said earlier, trying to judge a painter's entire career based on a single brushstroke, or maybe judging their skill based on how fast they completed one specific painting.
That's a powerful point. And the study used some specific analyses to illustrate this noisy signal idea, didn't they? Some kind of simulation.
They did, yes. They performed what's called a counterfactual analysis, which is a way of asking, what if?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, they ask, what if you could magically wave a wand and induce a developer to jump from the 50th percentile average to the 90th percentile in coding days per week?
Okay, so a huge, probably unrealistic jump in focused coding time.
Exactly. A massive hypothetical shift in how much focused coding time they get. Something that would be incredibly difficult, maybe impossible, to achieve consistently in the real world without major changes to their environment or role.
Right. And what did they find? Did that magic wand drastically shorten their cycle time in the simulation?
Well, here's the kicker. Even with that massive magical leap in coding days, the expected average change in that individual cycle time was still remarkably small.
Really? Even going from average to the top 10% in coding time didn't make a huge average difference.
Not a huge average difference. And perhaps even more critically, the range of plausible outcomes.
Yeah.
So the model's predictions for what that individual cycle time might actually be in any given month, even with that extra coding time, remained largely indistinguishable from what it was before. There was still massive overlap in the predicted possibilities.
Whoa. So even if someone codes way more, you still can't reliably predict if their cycle time next month will be significantly lower.
Pretty much. So what does this all mean for us, for you listening? It means trying to predict future cycle time or judge current performance based on just a month's average is like trying to forecast next year's weather based on seeing a single sunny afternoon in July.
There's just too much noise.
Exactly. Too many unmeasured factors, too much inherent variability in the work itself. Maybe the complexity changes, maybe dependencies change, maybe your cat walks across the keyboard. Lots of things. This strongly suggests that simplistic snapshot views of cycle time for individuals are highly likely to be misleading.
And potentially lead to frustration and misinterpretation, both for managers and developers.
Absolutely. The conclusion is clear from this extensive data. Cycle time, while potentially useful when aggregated and analyzed over long periods and across many individuals or teams to spot systemic trends.
Right, at a higher level.
It is a very poor resolution tool, as the paper puts it, for taking a snapshot of software work velocity at the individual level. It's a metric influenced by a myriad of factors, many of which are completely beyond an individual developer's direct control.
Like how tasks are defined in the first place.
Exactly. Or the complexity of the existing code base they're working in, unexpected external dependencies popping up, the natural ebb and flow of creative problem solving, which isn't linear, or even just interruptions from other team members needing help.
All that stuff that makes up real work.
All that stuff. This inherent variability and the large amount of unexplained variance mean that trying to pinpoint individual performance or predict future velocity from a single cycle time measurement, or even a few, is just fraught with peril. It's simply not a precise enough instrument for that specific purpose.
Okay, wow. That really challenges some common ways this metric is used, or maybe misused. So after all that deep dive into the numbers, the nuances, the noise, what's the so what? What does this mean for you, our listener, in practical terms? How can you apply these incredibly important insights in a real-world setting, whether you're a developer, a team lead, or a manager? It feels like we need to move beyond just looking at the raw data.
Absolutely. It's about smarter, more humane practices. And the research itself provides some really concrete recommendations and also warns against what it calls anti-patterns, things to avoid.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, and perhaps most importantly, echoing what we just discussed, no magic bullets. We've seen that implementing changes targeting any single factor, like simply trying to mandate more focused coding days or enforcing smaller PRs, will likely help a little bit on average.
But don't expect miracles.
Exactly. Don't expect dramatic, immediate, or magic shifts in cycle time. It's crucial to consider the potential trade-offs of any change. For instance, pushing for more coding days might reduce time for collaboration or learning, which could have negative long-term effects.
Right.
So the recommendation is an iterative, experimental approach. Try something small, measure its impact broadly, not just on cycle time, but maybe ask developers how useful they find the change, how it affects their work. Incorporate context beyond just the activity data.
Okay. Measure more holistically. What's next?
Second, embrace the noise. We have to accept that any single observation of cycle time is, as we've discussed, inherently very noisy. You need many observations over long periods, months, quarters, to establish a typical performance for a team or even an individual, or to identify a reliable trend.
Patience is key.
Patience and consistency. This also means that ensuring a standard and repeatable practice around how tickets are created, defined, estimated maybe, and managed across teams is a necessary precondition if you want to rely on this data for any valid comparisons at all.
Garbage in, garbage out, basically.
Pretty much. Without that consistency in how work is represented, your cycle time data might just be reflecting random fluctuations in ticket type or definition, not meaningful insights into flow.
Okay, consistency and long-term view. What else?
Third, shift to systems-level thinking. This is a big one, I think. The study provides strong justification for shifting focus away from individual blame or praise based on cycle time.
Moving away from the 10 by 0.1x labels.
Exactly. And towards understanding shared and environmental explanations for work speed. Why is cycle time high for this team or on this type of work? Developers often lack control over many factors that significantly impact their cycle time.
Like what?
Like the actual amount of focused coding time they can realistically get between meetings, urgent requests, or context switching, or the number of collaborators they need to involve because the system is complex. Or a sudden, unexpected influx of high-priority defect tickets that derails planned work.
Things often outside their individual control.
Often, yes. So when cycle time is consistently long, it's rarely just an individual performance issue. It's much more likely a systemic issue that needs to be addressed at the team, organizational, or even cross-functional level. Maybe planning needs improvement. Maybe dependencies are too complex. Maybe tooling is inadequate.
Look at the system, not just the person.
That's the core idea. Fourth, incorporate developer self-report. This seems obvious, but it's often overlooked when metrics dashboards become the focus.
Talk to people. What a concept.
Right. The people doing the work, the developers themselves, are the experts in what truly helps or hinders them day to day. Objective metrics like cycle time should always be considered in conversation with their perceptions and experiences.
Their qualitative insights give context.
Crucial context. Numbers alone simply cannot capture the full story. Developers know the intricacies of the code, the hidden challenges of dependencies, the real impact of interruptions far better than any dashboard ever could. Their insights are invaluable for interpreting the data correctly and identifying meaningful improvements.
Makes total sense. Any other takeaways?
And finally, a really pragmatic point about data quality is the signal. If you collect your own cycle time data, maybe using a tool or your own tracking, and you find that it's simply too noisy or inconsistent to draw any credible conclusions.
If it just looks like a random scatter plot.
Exactly. That finding in itself is a useful signal. It tells you that you either need to improve how and what you measure, maybe standardize ticket definitions, track work states more accurately, or perhaps you need to acknowledge that the inherent complexity of your particular work simply doesn't lend itself well to these kinds of simple snapshot metrics.
Sometimes the answer is that the metric isn't the right tool for the job, or at least not on its own.
Precisely. At the end of the day, as the study notes, software development is a deeply social, human activity involving creativity and problem solving. And these things are notoriously complex and variable. Trying to reduce them to a single number will always be an approximation, and sometimes a poor one.
That last point is so vital. Sometimes the data itself tells you where you need to adjust your measurement approach or even question the measurement itself. And tying into the idea of embracing the noise, it really hammers home that we can start to build up a sense of cycle times for teams and maybe even individuals, but only if we are willing to observe patiently over long periods of time.
Exactly.
This isn't about finding quick fixes or monthly performance rankings. It's about persistent, thoughtful observation, and crucially, conversation.
That's perfectly put. And even then, when you do have that longer-term view, it's crucial to remember that cycle time, even at its very best, analyzed perfectly, is still quite distant from the ultimate objective.
Which is?
Well, the real goal isn't just short cycle time for its own sake. It's usually about the efficient delivery of value to users or the business in a context that truly supports the people who produce that value. It's about product success, developer well-being, sustainable practices, and continuous improvement. Not just optimizing one number on a dashboard that might completely miss that bigger picture.
A means to an end, not the end itself. So we've unpacked a lot today. We've gone from the sort of elusive nature of productivity and software through the deep dive into the mechanics and the really quite nuanced findings of this extensive study on cycle time. But where do we go from here? How can we continue to improve our understanding and our measurement of software development in light of these complex realities we've discussed?
Yeah, that's the critical question. And this study actually provides a clear path forward, I think. It highlights both its own methodological strengths, which others can learn from, and also points to crucial directions for future research.
Okay, like what?
Well, one key insight, building on what we just discussed, is understanding the accumulation of small effects. While the individual effects of factors like, say, coding days might seem small in isolation when looking at one person for 1 month.
Right, the no silver bullet point.
Exactly. But those small effects can accumulate, if sustained, across an entire organization over time. For example, the study estimates that increasing average coding days by just 1 day per week, going from maybe 3 days to 4 days of active commits, could potentially reduce average cycle time by roughly 2 days. Now, compared to a median cycle time of maybe 13 days in their data set, 2 days might not sound earth-shattering for one ticket.
Okay.
But if you scale that across an entire organization with hundreds or thousands of developers consistently over a year, that average impact could translate into a very significant overall improvement in delivery speed and capacity.
Ah, so it's like compound interest for productivity improvements. Small gains add up system-wide.
That's a great analogy for it, yeah.
What?
It suggests focusing on enabling environments where these small positive factors can flourish consistently.
What are the methods themselves?
Methodologically, the study really demonstrates the power of using rigorous methods. As we discussed, using things like a Weibull distribution, which accurately models this kind of time-to-event data, with its characteristic long tail and no negative values, is far superior to simpler models like linear regression that assume a nice bell curve.
Which cycle time clearly doesn't follow.
No. Also, the way they simultaneously included multiple potential influencing factors in the same models avoids common biases you get in simpler analyses that might just split data into two groups, say, high collaboration versus low collaboration, and compare averages. That simpler approach can be misleading, because the groups might differ in other ways, too, like the complexity of work they handle.
So the sophisticated statistics really matter for getting reliable answers here.
They do. This approach allows for a much more precise understanding of how each factor influences cycle time while holding all the other measured factors constant. This is crucial for truly isolating effects and drawing robust conclusions that aren't just statistical illusions.
Okay, so better methods are key. What about future research topics? Where should we look next?
For future observational research, there's a clear call for more granular analysis of ticket life cycles. We need to get beyond just the start and end dates.
Like what happens in the middle.
Exactly. Understand the actual content and difficulty of tickets. Are we comparing apples to oranges if one ticket is a simple UI text fix and another is a complex architectural redesign that just happens to have the same cycle time? Probably. We need better ways to account for work complexity.
Makes sense.
We also need to find ways to map what the study calls invisible collaborative activities. Things like impromptu mentorship sessions, pair programming that isn't formally tracked, design discussions in Slack, planning meetings. These are often not captured in current commit or ticket data, but are absolutely vital to how work gets done and can significantly impact flow and quality.
Yeah, so much important work happens outside the official ticket.
A huge amount. And looking ahead to future intervention studies, the research stresses the need for robust studies that actually test planned changes in real engineering organizations. It acknowledges that organizational-level impacts might be quite subtle when you look at the individual-level data because of all that noise we talked about.
So we need clever ways to measure the impact of changes.
Yes, and crucially, it's not just about measuring cycle time. Future studies really need to measure developer growth, well-being, job satisfaction, and the overall work experience. Are interventions making developers more stressed even if cycle time goes down slightly? Are they fostering learning and skill development alongside efficiency?
Looking at the human impact, not just the process metric.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
These are critical questions that simple cycle time metrics alone will never answer. We need a broader perspective on what improvement actually means. Mm. So if we connect this all back to the bigger picture, improving software development is clearly not about finding one simple answer or a single magic metric. It truly requires, as the paper concludes, a plurality of methods, measurements, and thoughtful experimental practices.
A multifaceted approach for a multifaceted problem.
Exactly. It's an ongoing journey of learning and adaptation, always remembering that we're dealing with complex socio-technical systems involving creative humans.
That's such a powerful summation. This deep dive has really shown us, I think, that the path to understanding software velocity is far from a straight line. It's messy. It's filled with fascinating nuances and, maybe most importantly, crucial reminders that people aren't just numbers to be optimized on a spreadsheet.
Mm.
Software development is a complex human social activity, and that demands nuanced, multifaceted approaches, not simplistic silver bullet solutions.
Well said. And perhaps the most important takeaway from all of this research, for everyone listening to consider in their own context, is that, true, sustainable progress in software development likely comes not from relentlessly seeking a single magic metric or chasing an elusive 10x productivity multiplier.
Right.
But rather from intentionally fostering an environment, a culture, where curiosity, collaboration, psychological safety, and continuous learning are genuinely valued above simplistic, potentially misleading notions of raw productivity or speed. When we invest in understanding and improving the intricate dance of human interaction, context, and problem solving within our teams, that's when we ultimately build better software and create more sustainable, thriving, and truly productive environments.
Focus on the system, the culture, and the people, not just the output number.
That's the essence of it, I believe.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive today. We really encourage you, our listeners, to reflect on your own experiences with measuring work, maybe how cycle time is used or discussed in your own teams, and how these insights might shift your perspective or spark new conversations.